In the name of God, the beneficent, the merciful, the creator and the sustainer of the universe, peace and blessings upon the servant and messenger Muhammad forever. Amen. I bear witness that there is no God worthy of worship except the one true God, and I bear witness that Muhammad is the messenger and servant of God. I greet you, our viewers, with our usual greeting, the universal greetings of peace. A greeting that has been used by all of the prophets, from Abraham to Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon them all. Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be unto you. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid. Today we start continue with our second program in our special series that we've been doing on the concept of which we call SER, or shared equity in rental, as a viable alternative to high mortgage rates. I have joining me on the program as usual, Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Brother Jamal, since we did our first program in the series, a number of questions have been raised by the viewers relating to that program. Mm-hmm. One of the common questions that has been asked of me is, well, what is a program like Islam and Focus, which is a religious program, doing talking about the topic of home ownership? And I thought, Pastor, it might be interesting to have you comment on that, the topic of today's program.
Right. Well, this is normal for people to ask that, because in the Western civilization, the term religion usually is used to refer to a set of beliefs and values or devotion. And what's forgotten here is that in the case of Islam, it's not only a religion in that sense, it is also a religion in the sense of a comprehensive way of life that deals with and directs all aspects of human living. Part of that human living is the economic problems of mankind. And in fact, I should add here also that one of my major motives of trying to develop that system, even though the idea basically is not really totally new, but to develop it, is the fact that Islam prohibits usury or interest in the modern term, while allowing and encouraging people to participate in ventures on the basis of equal sharing in profits or losses. So this is the main idea behind it, which I feel would not only be significant as a concept or useful for Muslims alone by way of avoiding dealing in usury, but I'm sure it would be of interest to those who do mind the present high interest rate, and I haven't found anyone yet who does not mind in that case.
Certainly interest rates are making the situation very, very difficult for a number of people in this country at this particular point in time. Mm-hmm. But before we go on and explore the concept a little further in today's program, I want to start by just asking you to take a few moments to go back and to summarize the main points that we touched upon in program one, our introductory program, when we introduced the concept of SER.
Certainly. Perhaps you can do that in a brief way by referring back to the charts here, which are basically similar, the same as the ones used in the previous program. Shared equity in rental. And let's suppose you have a house whose fair value is $50,000. You have your mortgage coming up for renewal, and you still owe the company $40,000. What was suggested here is that you could divide the value of your house into 50 shares, $1,000 each, and then you can sell the other 30 shares, besides your cost or your own equity, to other investors who are interested, who can provide you with $30,000, that's in terms of cash. That amount could be used to repair the mortgage, which might be too expensive for you to manage, or in some cases, even if you're just buying a new home, the $10,000 would be your down payment, the other price would be the remaining portion of the car. And then you said, how do you reward those investors? You said you do that first by determining a gross rental value for that property. The assumption in this example is $450 per month, which is $5,400 per year, minus the expenses, main expenses I should say, taxes and insurance, that's $900 estimated. So that gives you a net rental value $3,500 or $90 per share, because you have what, a total of 50 shares. But the homeowner does not have to pay that amount because he can deduct his own share of rental because he is also a co-owner or co-investor. And since he has 10 shares multiplied by $90, so his share of that would be $900. That leaves $3,600 the shares of rental due to the investors. And then he said in order for the homeowner to accumulate more equity, he would be allowed, according to the contract, by a mutual agreement, to buy back some of those shares every year. The assumption made here is that she can afford to buy 3 shares per year, and assuming that she pays the same price at the beginning of the year, which would be 3,000, that means that adding 3,000 to 3,600 gives you $6,600 per year, coming to a monthly payment of $550, which in fact is less than what you would otherwise pay for mortgage at any rate now, except maybe if you talk about 15% rate. And then he said that in the second year and in every subsequent year, all you have to do is just update this basic information that we were talking about. You have to have a new appraisal of the property, which in this case has gone up, we assume, by 10%, which was 55,000. That means that the price per share would go also up by 10%, 1100. The new per rental value might also go up by 10%. It could be less, but I assume that's by the model. That gives you $5,940 minus expenses, again, updated to $990. That gives you $3,950 new net rental value for the second year, which if divided by the number of shares, which is constant in this case, 50 shares, it comes to $99 per share. Similarly, the owner would have to deduct his share of that rental, which in this case would be 13 shares. So that means that his proportion of rental would increase, and the proportion of rental for other investors would decrease because now they hold only 37 shares out of 50.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives 36.63, and again, he would have to buy 3 shares back at the new price, which is $1,100 per share. We're talking now about the approved value, the appreciated value of the shares. In that case, it would be $3,300, so the total payment in the second year, in that example, comes to $6,963, which is a monthly payment marginally more than the first year, $580 per month. Still, he can untap and accumulate a much larger equity than he would otherwise accumulate through the traditional mortgage system, and still with very affordable monthly payment.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, in the first program, you indicated that the homeowner would have to get together with the investors, and then they'd have to reach some kind of agreement in terms of the fair value for the property.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain how this is determined and what happens if you can't come to some kind of an agreement? I mean, if there's any dispute about the fair market value of the property?
Okay. The basic rule is, just like you said, the mutual agreement of both the investors and the homeowners as to what is a fair value. But of course, it is practical to ascertain impartiality of the estimate is to go and make a professional appraisal. And there are some people, as you know, around who have professional training in making appraisals. If you have some difficulty accepting a particular appraisal, you could do, for example, 2 appraisals and take the average. However, it seems that most of the appraisals probably come with a very close type of estimate because they have a certain formula they apply plus some consideration of the market value. So you could do it. But it's a matter of course, if you have 2 appraisals, then the cost, of course, would increase.
Mm-hmm.
So you could resolve it by specifying in the contract that this is the way how appraisals are going to be made.
How, approximately how much does it cost to have an appraisal done, and who would pay for it? Would it be the homeowner, or would it be the investor?
Okay, I mentioned in the previous program that one property in Halifax is now under the fair system.
Mm-hmm.
In that particular case, it costs about $125 to make professional appraisal. As to who pays for it, my feeling is that it should be shared by all, because we are treating it as course of Lincoln, or course of running the prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that could be deducted from the total or gross rental for the year where the approval is made. That's distributed the Lord for everybody in proportion of their share.
Mm-hmm. Now, you suggested that the property should be divided into shares. Does that mean going through the process of formally issuing shares in the form of documents and saying that one might buy
like the Longy books and the company?
Right. Or is it something that's a little less formal than that? And what about the question of title? Does it mean that the title is changed from the original owner to a co-ownership kind of situation? Or just how is that? And I guess I'm asking a series of questions here. I'm wondering about whether or not we issue formal shares, the question of title.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked last time about $1,000 shares. Why $1,000?
Okay. First of all, with respect to your first question, in terms of issuing a particular document, you could do that if you like. But I don't think really that this is needed, because you have the full legal guarantee. If you sign a document having the owner, homeowner, and the investor signing a document which holds the property in collateral until all their principal as well as their profits are totally paid for. So there's a guarantee, and could specify in the document that these are the shares contributed by each party.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to issue, but you could, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, with respect to the title, you don't necessarily have to change the title. Even mortgage companies themselves do not ask you to change the title.
Yeah.
The title is simply held, you know, by them until you pay your
mortgage
and your social obligation. So there's no need really to change title. However, if you decide to pursue that not within a small circle but within a group, a corporation, or let's say a credit union, or whatever other corporate body, it is quite possible that you could operate it as a housing co-op, in a sense that the housing co-op would hold title of all the properties under this system.
Mm-hmm.
And if everything is sold off, the title can be transferred back to the owner, to the homeowner. So it's flexible, but you don't necessarily have to do that. So if you do, then every year you have to change the title, because the proportion of shares do undergo some changes, and that requires lots of taxes and costs which are not really needed.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it like more than something doing essentially simply holding the document, getting your property and collateral. Second issue was with respect to the question of shares. Why $1,000? Well, I'm not claiming that this is a magical number. It could be $10, it could be $100. There's no reason why not. In fact, if you have a credit union, as you know, you could have even as small as $5 per share in the credit union. But I just suggested that as a reasonably convenient number, because when you talk about a house worth $50,000,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't go about collecting $10 or something like that first. And most people who want to make this kind of investment can possibly make at least $1,000 as a unit per share. However, if you want to apply that in a mosque or church group or club, for example,
mm-hmm.
where there are some people who are not that well-to-do and many people are willing to participate, but nobody really can afford, not too many can afford more than $500, well, you can reduce the number, you reduce the value of the shares to 500 and increase the number. It doesn't make any difference as far as the value of the shares. It's mutually agreeable and practicable type of service.
Now, some people may wonder about how you could charge rent to a homeowner for use of his own home. How would you respond to that?
I repeat the same question, also similar to you. But the point is this: if you totally own your home and nobody else has any claim on it, then obviously nobody is going to charge you any rent. I mean, it's just beyond reason to expect that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about a home that is worth $50,000 and you own only by way of equity, $10,000, then it's not really fully your own home. But in a system like that, the mix-up happens because the concept is totally different from mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the case of mortgage, truly you are not paying rentals to the mortgage company, but you're paying interest because you are a borrower and the mortgage company is a lender.
Mm-hmm.
But under this system, the homeowner is not a borrower and the people who invest that money or provide that money are not lenders. That's why they don't charge interest. They are co-investors. All of them are co-investors, including the homeowner himself.
Mm-hmm.
So just like you and I owning a home, you have half of it, I own half of it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But one of us needs it to live in. So I said, okay, we rent it to you, or you rent it to me. It's fair enough. We both own it, and we rent it, one of us rent it to the other. But of course, we both share the rental value. So I tell you only half of the rental. So it's just a very simple consequence in terms of sharing in the consequence of the whole deal, really.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, obviously, it is unfair for the investors to contribute the money. They don't get interest, and they don't get rental. What do they get? There must be some fair return for them, and the closest thing really is just rental agreement.
Mm-hmm. I think our viewers would find it useful if you could give them some idea of how the rental value is determined.
Well, it could be determined basically in the same manner as the determination of the value of the property. That is to say, you could also ask whoever is making appraisal of the value of the house to tell you also what is the fair rental value of a house with this facility or that, you know, facility in that particular area.
Mm-hmm.
And this information are available. People who are in the field, especially companies with rental departments, would have some of this information available. But as I said before, this is similar to the appraisal of the value of the property. It's a matter of mutual agreement and what is regarded as a fair rental value to be charged. But I may make a suggestion here, however, that as a rule of thumb, a very useful rule, is that you could determine also the rental value as a percentage of the value of the property. And I think anywhere between 0.75% to 1% of the value of the property by way of rental value is not really beyond reason. It seems to be about the average that you may find in the market. And that could also be incorporated in the agreement and resolve this whole problem. Of course, needless to say that we're talking here about rental value as a gross rental value, not including, of course, basic expenses.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's turn to this question of expenses now. I think many people would want to know what are included as legitimate expenses and what kinds of expenses are excluded. Could you explain this?
You mean the expenses that are deducted from the gross rental to reach the figure of net rental to reach services?
Right.
Okay. Well, there are two items that I have no doubt at all including. Two or three items, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
One is taxes and insurance. Because when you rent a home or apartment, you don't pay tax, do you? Since the whole concept is shared rental and equity, or shared equity and rental, then it's only fair that these basic expenses would be paid by all. So the rental would be just the equivalent in the market of a house that you rent in the same condition, in the same area, a similar area.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you pay? You pay that X for $150, but not taxes and insurance. So this should be levied against all in proportion of their sales, and that's why we say that these expenses should be deducted from the gross rental.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's useful also to add a few dollars to cover minor or basic repairs like, you know, fixing the leaking process or something like that, or maybe allowing for painting every 10 many years. Just taking that into account by averaging that out, because that again seems to be the practice that when you rent a home,
mm-hmm.
still the homeowner is responsible for this basic repairs, minimum repairs.
Right.
And of course, the homeowner is only partly owner, other investors are partly owner in that sense, so they have to share it. So this all could be deducted from the gross rental value. As far as your second part of the question, what should be excluded from those expenses? Well, my answer to that is that things like grass cutting, snow removal, of course, would not be included because, again, in the normal practice when you rent, you have to take care of that yourself, in most cases, I would say. Nor should it include any basic capital investment or improvement in the house, like, for example, building an extra room or something of that sort. That, of course, does not automatically come as a current expense to be deducted from rental.
Mm-hmm.
This basic maintenance, I should say.
Well, now, what about the case of capital improvement? Say you're involved in a fair contract, and after a couple of years, you decide that you want to add a
something on, I don't know, maybe a swimming pool or do a repair to the basement or some alteration to the structure of the house and so on. Who would pay for that and how?
Okay. By the way, this again has to be specified, and in fact, in one of the documents that I made by way of example how to apply the system, that also was taken into account. You cannot, of course, prevent the homeowner from improving his property and work for 14 years, even in Vancouver, for example. It takes 14 years before you take full ownership of your home at this monthly payment. But there are one or two alternatives that you could solve that problem. One is to say, okay, if you people, as a homeowner, we tell them, if you people are interested, you can all share this additional cost of improvement because it would reflect on the value of the property, which in turn reflects also on your share, the value of your share. Because the appraisal of the property after you do that would go up not only by inflation, but it would go also by the improvements you're adding to the value of the property. In this case, everybody, homeowners as well as investors, can share, let's say, the $3,000 or so additional improvement by splitting that in proportion to the number of shares that each one of them holds. This is one way of dealing with it. The other possibility would be to let the homeowner make this improvement, let's say spend the $3,000 to finish his business, let's say, and then issue him 3 shares. For example, in the first year, the share is valued at $1,000. So he would be entitled, let's say, to 3 shares. Of course, in subsequent years, it would have to be the price of the share which is current at the stated value. That means simply that the formula would basically remain the same, except that the total number of shares would raise. In the previous example, we're assuming 50 shares. Now he's paying $3,000 to fix the business.
53.
It becomes 53, so the number of shares becomes 53, and his share would be now 13 shares instead of 10. And gradually he keeps building up more and more shares. So it's just a mechanical problem, really. It's not another problem at all.
And many people who've watched the program found it hard to believe
that more intelligent sheer principles. But in the meantime, in the following year when you want to buy shares, you don't buy them at the original price of $1,000. You buy them at the new market value, which should be 10% more. And every year you buy, you have also to keep increasing what you pay by way of getting back the shares. But I believe that this is still a very fair system. It's very reasonable, and I did make some computation about that. And your total payment under the fair system, in the example we have given, as compared to the mortgage, would be equivalent to something like 13 to 15% mortgage, depending, of course, on the depreciation of the property.
Yes. Now, you indicated that under the fair agreement, the homeowner may buy back more shares in order to build up his equity each year.
Yes.
Who receives the money when he buys these additional shares?
Okay, there are two ways of doing that. First of all, if the all investors want to have this investment as long term, they're not really in a hurry to get their money back. What we could do is that the money that is received by way of purchase as shares could be distributed among them in proportion of their shares, which means that everybody would have a reduction, a proportionate reduction in the number of shares, a decimal point of shares that he possesses. That would be one thing. But the beauty of the system is that it's very flexible. You could also, with the consent of other investors, or you could specify that suppose you want to contribute $5,000 to a project like that, but you do expect that you might need that money itself in 2 years to buy a home or a car. Well, you could agree and specify that with the investors, that, for example, in the first year when the owner buys that 3 shares, that you take it all yourself, which means that you reduce your holdings from, let's say, $10,000 or 10 shares to 7 shares. So this could work out, you know, can be worked out between the investors in any way they like. It's a very flexible system.
Great. And there's only benefit from the investor's point of view to participating in a scheme like this, vis-a-vis participating in other alternative kinds of investment schemes. And again, I guess the question is, what price?
Okay. First of all, the investor gets the rental income every month, and that comes close to 9 to 10% of his investment. He gets an appreciation of the value of his shares when it's paid back to him, and that's again compounded in that example at about 10% per year. So that's another about 10% at the minimum, I should say, in this area. And thirdly, in addition to that, he gets also this monthly payment by way of cash, which should also be reinvested, and that would be a third source. At what price? Well, the main price here is that you have to be fair and expect to participate in a smaller increase or possibly even decline in the property, the value of the property. So it's still fair for both sides.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting a signal that our time for today is gone. We want to thank you for watching our program where we've been discussing the concept of shared equity in rental as a viable alternative to high mortgage rates. Thank you for watching. Assalamu alaikum.
Peace be unto you.